We're back. Nick Kypreos, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee for our national edition of the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. All right, boys. So, like, what the heck happened to our Canadian teams last night? Did anyone play in the CFL last night and lose too, or just
goalies,
hockey and baseball?
Can I tell you my biggest worry out of last night? It's about the Jets.
Why is that?
I thought Avalanche looked pretty good.
Well, the more concerning part of that is Gorgiev kind of pulled it together.
Yeah, he was just fine. Yeah. And I just thought that they double shifted McKinnon and McCarr and everything the second period. Just a tidal wave.
Yeah.
It's just a tidal wave.
How long do they do that for? Every game and a double shift those guys?
Probably. Yeah.
As far as the Vancouver Canucks are concerned, major storyline, obviously. Satyr Shah, host of Canucks Central and Canucks game host of on Sportsnet, will join us in a few minutes. But at least Hellebuck's still there. We'll get into it a little later on the, I don't know, I lost count, 11 goals in two games?
Six plus five is 11. Carry them
on the Hellebuck. We'll get into that.
I only have 10 fingers, boys.
But at least the Jets still have them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Vancouver Canuck fans cannot say the same about Demko.
Yeah.
And the overall feeling of learning this yesterday and then the momentum that was lost from game one, or no, it wasn't lost. It was lost at some point during the game. And I don't even know if there was momentum lost during the game last night when Vancouver throws the kitchen sink at Nashville.
All over him.
But can't score.
I thought they looked excellent last night for long stretches of that game.
I mean, boy, it's one of those things. Like, you know, Saros is on Nashville. You can't say, well, they just lucked out with a goaltending performance. That is, let me check, in line with goaltending performances they always get. Yeah. So that's a tough guy to beat, and they need saves too.
I want to give Nashville a lot of credit because I think they didn't slide into the playoffs here. They earned it. There's
biggest
no question.
Surprise of the season
and they're battlers. And yes, it takes bravery to stand and block a shot, but it's not really fun hockey to watch five goalies out on the ice. I found it very frustrating.
We gave them
it's a frustrating
credit.
Look.
We gave them credit, but they are terrible spectating. I mean, just as a hockey perspective.
It's like a shooting gallery.
Do you want to quickly, before we get to Sat, hear what Andrew Burnett had to say about the block shots and stuff?
Sure.
Because if you got that clip for us there, Derek, it's Burnett clip one.
I think it was one in the second period. And I thought the third period we were committed to the pain. And I think something that maybe game one we learned from a little bit, maybe weren't quite as committed to the pain. I thought and tonight, with the block shots and the things that we did, sacrificing our body, you know, so we learned. And we're still growing. We're not where we want to be, but we're getting better. And today was a good step.
Committed to the pain,
committed
baby.
Committed to
okay, let's
like
welcome
me
in.
Watching every Leaf game for the last 10 years.
We'll welcome in Sat Shah, host of Canucks Central. And Sat, it was like watching a 45-minute power play last night at times. At least that's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, that's really what it was. I mean, especially that third period. I will say, though, the first period, the Canucks were utterly dominant. Same thing with the third. But I do think in the whole narrative of how this game unfolded and how the Canucks were dominant, the second period, I thought the Predators were the better team. They created more quality looks. They started taking away the run of play from Vancouver. They had a couple of penalties go against Van, and then they took over after that period. So actually, I think in the second, I'm not sure it's getting talked about enough, as much as they were under siege, when it took the 3-0 lead, I thought the Preds were the better team in the second period. Now, they hung on for dear life in the third, and Saros made a number of big saves. And it felt like, you know, a goal or two was maybe imminent for Vancouver. But I don't know if enough is being made about how good the Preds were in that second period to take full control of that game from Vancouver.
The Preds are good. You know, they bring it, man. They play fast and they play responsible, and that makes it a challenge to beat any hockey team. Tell us about, we're going to have a vibes check with Vancouver in general. Like last night, the chant of let's go, Casey, and then the puck gets deflected into the net was such like a, we're trying for this guy, but it's hard. Where are things at today after a loss?
You know, I will say, so post-game, Lena on our station, who does producing work, she was collecting sound from fans after the game. And a lot of fans were super excited still. Like, hey, listen, we still feel good about where the team's at. If they play that way, they should be able to win the series still. So for a market that can be, let's say, very neurotic at the best of times and always kind of looking for something to go wrong. And there was a lot of trepidation when the Demko injury news came through. But I got to say, I think Canucks fans as a whole, especially at the rink last night and after the game, they're still pretty positive. So the vibes are still good. I wonder what those vibes look like if things don't go their way, say, the next two games in Nashville. But I will say, I was pretty impressed, despite the Canucks losing last night and, you know, not going their way. A lot of fans are still showing some enthusiasm, showing a lot of excitement. And, you know, I felt bad for Casey Smith because the thing going through my mind was, man, this chant is going through. Like, here's Canucks fans. They're giving this guy their support. They're putting aside the Demko injury. They're trying to be positive. This is just such a fantastic vibe. And then literally, you know, a few seconds later, the puck goes in on him. A bit of an unfortunate break. But I do think the entire fan base is trying to put on a brave face before the game, during the game, and after the game last night. And we'll see how long that kind of lasts if the Canucks can't get back to winning.
Was there some hope that this could be a real short Demko situation? And then we heard Rick Tocchet in his post-game comments utter the words weak. Didn't he use week to week?
Week to week.
So did that suck the life out of a few people, you think?
Well, a little bit, but I do think you're right. I do think that created a bit more trepidation because I think fans were kind of hoping that, hey, there's been a lot of reporting and it's not looking very good for Demko, but maybe when Tocchet speaks, it will be a bit more optimistic. Because during the day, the morning, he said day to day. Then by the evening, he said week to week. And when asked by one of the reporters that if this means Demko's done for the series and likely not going to come back, he answered by saying yes, and then continued on to answer another question. So it became very clear that Demko's done for this series. And I do think some of the other stuff out there, and I know Elliot's mentioned it too, that the status isn't quite clear on the second round. I've heard a lot of conflicting things. I've heard that maybe he'll be back the second round. Others have told me maybe he won't be back to the conference final. Now, that obviously means the Canucks have to get through Nashville, have to maybe get through the next round as well. But as we sit here today, it doesn't look to be overly optimistic on the outlook. And I've seen a lot of fans point to that and say, hey, like, if they're not going to have Demko, it's one thing to get past Nashville. How are you going to get past, say, Edmonton if they do beat LA, or even LA if the goaltending is not going to be a big key for you? And that's going to be the big question. I know that Demko is the type of guy that really works hard, and he has beaten ETAs in the past, and he will do everything humanly possible to get himself back. So it wouldn't shock me if the Canucks do get past Nashville, that maybe you see him in the second round. But even the second round right now kind of seems like a hopeful ETA for his arrival in the playoffs again.
Boy, well, that's not great. But if there is going to be a second round, and we believe there are here, Canada, good team, Vancouver Canucks, you're going to need a star player to play well. Elias Pettersson is starting to take a little bit of heat. Hasn't gone exactly his way through two games. Here in Toronto, we're doing our own fiasco where you're mean to a very good player because they don't score for two games. Yeah. How are things going in Vancouver on the Pettersson front?
Oh, now he's the guy that's taking the brunt of the criticism. And I mean, a lot of fans that even call themselves, you know, Pettersson backers and that are very critical of his game right now. And even he himself was very critical of how he played. And Tocchet had mentioned that he has to get through it as well. But I do think there has been a bit of a tide turn around Pettersson. It all started before he signed his contract because he was non-committal for a long time. The team talked about, and you guys know too, with Rutherford not knowing where Pettersson stood, and he mentioned that to the media a little bit, that they wanted to get him signed. So that kind of started a bit of trepidation from fans wondering, hey, is this guy even going to sign here? Does he want to be a Canuck? He wants $12 million plus. Then he signs the contract, and since then, his game hasn't really been at the top level you expect him to be at. And because of that, there has been some buyer remorse from a lot of fans, and even people mentioning now, is he even a superstar? Is he even worth the money or not? And my take on it is he's 25 years old. He had a 102-point season as a 24-year-old. He had 89 points this year. Yeah, he can be better, but he's a star-level player, and if they produce like that, they are going to get paid. But last night, the biggest issue I found for his game was defensively. On that first goal, Hughes falls down, it creates a turnover, but then Sissons and Pettersson are going for the same puck along the near wall, and Pettersson has a line on it, but kind of slows up and doesn't go hard to the board to get the puck. points. And Pavilia beats him to it, and that's his. And then Pavilia beats Pettersson to the middle of the ice to tip that puck in. So the first goal happens, not great on Pettersson. The third goal happens, Pettersson gives the puck away at the blue line, and then he gets beat by Sissons going towards the net. Now he ends up knocking the puck himself. That two spots, two goals where he, you want to say he was directly at fault for the first one, maybe, the second one perhaps. And then he had a wide open net that he missed on. So if you look at that game for Pettersson, say, if he scored a goal, and if he doesn't make those two mistakes, do the Canucks maybe win that game? Do we go to overtime? Do we look at a game that's a lot different in the third period? So he was the guy that ended up getting the brunt of the criticism. And a lot of fans are really frustrated where his game's at. And some people now think his game is never going to go back to what it used to be a few years ago, or even last year or the first half of this season. And to that, I say he'll be fine at some point. The question is, can he find his game fast enough in the playoffs? And you guys know, I mean, Kipper, you play with players too. You can believe in a player's potential long term. The question is, can he find that gear in the moment, and can that be good enough in the playoffs? And right now, that's the question we don't have answers to. And I do think a lot of fans are concerned that he's not going to be able to find that gear in this playoff.
We're talking to Satyr Shah, hockey host for the Canucks Central show on Sportsnet. Does Pettersson, Sat, have the personality to handle the scrutiny? Is he the type of guy that it can roll off his back and come up with a big game, or is he a little more sensitive?
Well, I do think he is a little sensitive. I think he's also admitted to that in the past. Now, he worked through something similar a few years back where he had a real tough start to the season, and he was reading all the press clippings, and he spoke to the media about it, that, hey, I've learned how to handle and navigate these things. I can't get too worried about what people say and just focus on myself. And right now, I wonder if he's kind of back into that same, you know, headspace again. The thing I would always say about Pettersson, as much as, you know, he's not always the most open with the media, he can push back a little bit and can be a bit of a recluse, I don't think he would have signed and stayed in Vancouver if he was really worried about the spotlight. He was really worried about being under scrutiny. Like, he knows what it's like in this market if you don't pull your weight and play to the level that you need to play at. So I think he can handle it. The question is, has he matured enough to be able to handle it in the moment and get through it within a couple of days? And does he have the mental fortitude within a series to bounce back from a bad game or two? And those are types of things that we don't quite know yet. I think he's going to be fine. But right now, we've been looking at his game, and when you don't see the signs be there in terms of confidence, the question just becomes, is he going to be able to find that in the moment in this playoff, especially against this national team? And they're going to need him. If the Canucks are going to overcome Demko's injury, if they're going to get more shots on goal and perhaps break through some of these blocked shots, they're going to need Elias Pettersson to pick some corners. And right now, that's not happening for him.
So, Sat, you know, in other markets, everyone's aware of this Demko story. Everyone's aware of a guy like Pettersson. What are some of the other storylines of the Canucks? Maybe some of the underlying stuff, the guys that, like yourself, who watch it really close, are keeping an eye on in terms of the Canucks finding their way past the Predators?
Defensively, they've been absolutely stout. They're D-men, and they've been getting a lot of criticism over the past few years for the defense. They've really rebuilt it. They did miss Tyler Myers last night. I thought Noel Juulsen came in and played well, And me saying missing Tyler Myers is something that wasn't really uttered much the past 4 or 5 years, right? But this year's really turned his game around. But also, the thing is, the way Zadorov's come in and played, the way Ian Cole has found his game, Soucy's been terrific. We all know how good Hughes and Veronica have been as a pair. But those next four defensemen, they're all 6'4" or taller, right? I mean, Zadorov and Myers are two of the biggest defensemen in the league. Ian Cole's an absolute unit. And then, you know, you have a guy like Carson Soucy who has size, great defensive ability, great stick, his gap control is fantastic. They're really hard to wade through. You see how hard it is for Nashville to get through that defense. They punish guys along the wall. The issue with that defense at times has been there's variance in Zadorov and Myers' game, where you see Zadorov these first two games, he's probably been an 8 or a 9 out of 10 in his performance, but he will have a 3 or a 4 at times. And that's what makes it a bit complicated with him, where sometimes you feel like, man, this guy should be a $5 or $6 million defenseman, but he doesn't string them together as consistently. And Myers is kind of similar as well. But the last couple of games, these first two games, down the stretch here, ever since they also acquired Elias Lindholm, this team has been really hard to break down, especially down the middle too, when they have Miller, Pettersson, and Lindholm. All those guys, I know Pettersson's skinny, but Lindholm is 6'1", 200 pounds. JT's 6'1", and 220 pounds. Pettersson's 6'2". Then you have those trees on the back end. Teddy Bluger's a fourth line center. Defensively, they've been an outstanding team. But what's kind of ironic is, that offensive firepower they had for the first half of the season has really dried up.
There's only one line I think that can hurt the Vancouver Canucks, and that's O'Reilly, Forsberg, and Nyquist. And maybe a new appreciation for that line being maybe one of the better lines in the National Hockey League, but nobody ever knew because they play in Nashville.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Nyquist has been terrific. I mean, talk about the fountain of youth. This guy's has found. He's been working out with Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin or something the last couple of years because he's been incredible this year. And you see his work on the power play as well. I don't think he gets talked about enough. On the power play, of course, you got Ryan O'Reilly, Romy Josi, and Philip Forsberg. But Nyquist, the way he ties things together, the way he hunts pucks down, he's really good at playing the point as well, keeping the puck at the blue line. He walks the line for a forward really well, too. I think he's played off Josi well. He does a lot of different things. I think Nyquist has been really underrated with how he's played this year. And you really watch him on the forecheck. His speed looks to be back. But your guys are right. I mean, that's a line that probably doesn't get enough credit. And I think one guy that probably isn't being talked about enough is Gustav Nyquist right. And how much of an X factor he's been in this series already.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the coach there, Rick Tocchet, and the job he's done with his team. Saw his interview, Colby Armstrong did a great bit with him and Quinn Hughes, which was really, really well done. Check that out if it's on sportsnet.ca. Your thoughts on where he has his team positioned, his messaging, and has it changed over the course of the season?
It has. I think, and it's something that I was really impressed by. So towards the end of the season, he was really on the guys. Like, he was really like, hey, you guys can't expect to run into the playoffs and just up your game. You have to be trending in the right direction. He was really nitpicking their game and pushing them to be a lot better. As soon as the playoffs began, though, he completely changed. He's like, we have a good team. We know what we have to do. It's about us building the team up now. We have to build in on our confidence. And he's been very encouraging, even after last night's game. And people wanted blood on Elias Pettersson. And he was said, you know, instead of saying, yeah, he struggled, he needs to be better, it was, this is great for the kid. You know, it's experience for him. He's going to get through it. He'll be a lot better. His overall demeanor has become really positive once the postseason began. And I think that's an encouraging way to go about things with a team that doesn't have a ton of playoff experience. And instead of putting the seed of doubt in their heads and be like, if you guys don't find your game, you're going to lose. And instead of, you know, really creating this, you know, this nightmare scenario for the team if they don't play their game, he's been very positive about what they need to do and the outlook he has for the team. And I think that shows a lot of maturity and emotional understanding of where players are at. And those are the types of things I look for sometimes because I always cringe when I see a head coach heading into a big game or a playoff game, almost put too much on the guys. Then you almost plant the seed of doubt on the guys. And in the regular season, it's one thing. In the playoffs, it's all about confidence. So I've been really impressed with his overall demeanor. Now we'll see what happens if they lose another game or, you know, they're in a tough spot in the series. But so far, there's been a real change in his messaging the past 4 or 5 days.
So just prior to coming on our show, we had a brief conversation on Winnipeg and Colorado. And I know Demko didn't play last night, but what do you think the narrative would have been in Vancouver if he gave up 11 goals in the first two games at home like Hellebuck did in Winnipeg?
Oh, honestly, people would be calling for Casey DeSmith to get a start, maybe, or maybe even Arthur Shalov, the first great goalie to come up. I mean, because even earlier this season, when Demko had this incredible start to the campaign, right, it was unbelievable. Then DeSmith went undefeated his first 5 or 6 games, and there were people wondering if DeSmith should start more games, and maybe DeSmith should be the starting goalie, and maybe you don't need a goalie like that for Demko. Now, Vancouver's always had a precarious relationship with goaltenders. It goes back a very long time. And there was a love-hate relationship with Luongo, of course. And we all know the days with Kluche, and then you go through everything else that's kind of happened. And it can be fickle when it comes to goaltending. It's very much, what have you done for me lately? But I do think the market we're in here in Vancouver would take the goalie getting ventilated, like the way Hellebuck did the first two games, far differently than they're taking it in Winnipeg right now.
So going into, you know, game three here, let's say the Canucks find their way through this series. How do you feel about the Canucks as a team that has a legitimate chance to go in a deeper push of sorts? Because they really feel like one of Canada's stronger hopes mm-hmm. here.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, a lot of it comes out in Demko, right? Like, can they get him back at some
point? He's that important.
Because right? I think he really is. I mean, and I thought DeSmith was fine last night, but you still see he's not the same. You know, and I think the confidence it gives, I mean, you guys know, you have one of the top netminders backing you, you're going to feel a lot better about how you go about things every game than when you have somebody else. And to a man, they always talk about they believe in DeSmith, they believe in their overall team game. But I don't know if you have the same swagger if you don't have him. And then not to mention the goals above expected that you can get saved by Thatcher Demko that I don't think that Casey DeSmith can really replicate and hasn't really shown you can replicate. So a lot of it comes down to that. But I do think, going back to what I mentioned about the defense, the depth down the middle, if their guys can get going offensively, I still think this can be a really dangerous team, but they really can't afford to miss any of the top guys. when we talked about this, the deadline guys, I was shocked the Canucks weren't able to add somebody else at the deadline. They were really trying to add a forward. It's clear their top six forward short. So it's like, I don't think they can really handle a big injury to one of our top players. That really puts them in the tough spot. But if they get Demko healthy, I do see a pathway if they get past Nashville that they can do a little bit of damage. But the margin of error is so thin when it comes to being healthy.
Sat, before we let you go, just your thoughts on Dakota Joshua. And he had a really good season, and yet he just seems to have elevated into the playoffs. And just overall, what you've seen out of his season so far.
What an incredible story. And to be honest, guys, when this season began, I had some questions because he was one of the guys who showed up to camp, not out of shape by any means, but the coach mentioned that, hey, we challenged our guys to show up in incredible shape, and he didn't meet the very high standard we set. He had a healthy scratch earlier this season. He looked off the pace in the preseason early in the year. He looked off the pace. And I kind of wonder, did he ruin an opportunity for himself coming off a year where he scored, 12 goals, 11 goals? He has size, has physicality. There aren't enough guys like that around the NHL. If he would have put together two decent seasons back-to-back, he could have earned himself a nice payday. And for a guy who's really toiled in the minors and hasn't found it until he's 26, 27 years old, I thought this could have been a huge missed opportunity for him. But what a testament to his work ethic and perseverance during the season to get himself into shape, earn the respect and confidence of the coach yet again. And just his overall game has gotten a lot better. There aren't enough guys like this around the National Hockey League. Guys that can score almost 20 goals, have physicality, they can play a skill game, they can win along the boards, aren't afraid to drop the gloves. But he's more than a one-dimensional 5-on-5 player. He's become one of their best penalty killers. And last night, for instance, on the PK, three or four clears, he was completely the reason why it happened. He's really good at reading the play. He's showing a lot of chops outside of just being this physical guy that can pot a few goals. And I wonder if he keeps doing what he's done so far in the playoffs, he might price himself out of Vancouver. I know the Canucks want to keep him, but you guys know when it comes to finding guys that have some size, that can have a little pop in their game, what's a free agent market going to look like for him? And there's no better stage to showcase yourself in the playoffs. And I wonder if he's setting himself up for a massive payday once July comes around.
Game 3 Friday. Can't wait. Hey, Sat, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you coming on the show and giving us some excellent feedback on what we saw last night out of the Vancouver Canucks. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, guys. Always appreciate it. Love watching your show.
Thanks, man.
Again soon.
Thanks, Sat. Appreciate it, bud.
All right, Sat Shaw.
All right.
A great job on Vancouver. Central, yeah. Canuck Central.
Feel bad for it. It's just the Band-Aid goalie is a painful one where it's like he's so good.
Yeah.
And he makes you a true contender. But a lot of times it's just he's not there.
It's also so hard to know, like with a backup goaltender, where the great goalie would have made an exceptional save. Yeah. Like the first one is kind of weird, right? The weird tip that goes in during the Let's Go Casey chant. But like Forsberg dunks on him.
Yeah, it was a poster.
In a big way. Yeah. And it's like, you're not supposed to stop Forsberg from 2 feet away from the net, but maybe he would have.
Poke check maybe. Yeah.
There is nothing like a psychological hit on you when your number one goalie goes down.
Absolutely.
Right? I don't even think it compares to
doesn't matter what level
a star centerman or a star D-man. You still think you can kind of piecemeal this thing, but your star goalie goes down, you're like, oh, God.
You're like kind of cheating to the middle to make sure you don't get beat.
You're not playing the same game. You're not playing free.
And you know that.
Yeah.
And you know that this guy will find a way to make the save and cover my ass, and we're still in the hockey game.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what the vibe was watching that first goal go in. And it was a hell of a redirect.
Yeah.
Right? It was very... Very
but I mean,
good.
It's a tip from the middle of the high slot where the goal is just not in the net. But, that's
and they're chanting his name, and it's like right in the middle of the chant, you're like, no!
I feel for him. Like, he's a good goalie. He's had a decent year. That was a tough moment.
That sucks.
Anyway.
That sucks.
All right. We want to get a thought from Rick Bonus on last night's survey. You want to go to break?
Let's do game time.
Okay, we'll do
game
time.
And then we'll go to break, and then we'll come back and hit on all that stuff.
Love it.
All right, it's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app, play this odds, and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Obviously, three games tonight. The one that kind of catches my eye here, for the number is Vegas and Dallas. Vegas is plus 135 tonight on the road in Dallas. Bet365 clearly thinks that Dallas needs this one really bad, and they're going to get the absolute A effort. But after watching that Golden Knights team and seeing them full bore, like, I, you know, getting them at a plus 135 number, if you're a gambling man, seems like something that's pretty tantalizing to me.
But yeah, you're right. Like, Dallas goes down two and then goes to Vegas. That's a hard spot. Like, you know, full DeBoer is what you're going to get. You're going to get the best out of the Dallas Stars tonight.
Yeah, there's a real sense for Dallas after that game going, that's not an eighth seed team.
No. But they need to get over that fast.
Yes, they do.
And be like, this is the conference final.
Yes.
Because that's a good hockey.
Correct. And I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, too, you got to just factor in Peter DeBoer. And this is, remember, he was the coach there that it was an ugly breakup.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is a very emotional series for Pete DeBoer. And we haven't got that sense yet. He's saying all the right things. He's doing all the right things.
I mean, he alluded to it after game one, being like, well, yeah, we hadn't seen that before. Like, like we played the clip. He was kind of alluding to the elephant in the room with the Golden Knights.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And another way too early check-in on the Conn Smythe Trophy.
Yep.
Connor McDavid is a massive favorite. Plus 750.
Yeah.
And the next closest is plus 1600. Artemi Panarin is the next closest. Shesterkin, Aho, Anderson is up there 18-1. So they're really liking they're favoring, obviously, the Rangers and the Canes in the East.
Yeah.
And I think McDavid, I mean, when you get five helpers in the first game of the playoffs.
I think Gretzky's best year in playoffs, he had 30 assists. I was like, McDavid could do that in six games.
But you got to make sure that you're still playing. Like, you can put all the assists all you want. You can't stop after the second round.
No.
Right?
It's got to be a complete game. But he can do that.
You can put your money down right now, but you better make sure they get to a Stanley Cup final.
And
I mean, he's the type of guy that could win it losing in a Stanley Cup final.
I might actually, that's a pretty tempting number.
And, right?
For sure.
Yes.
Well, if he has 40
points. But he's got to get there.
And if you want one for way down the list, guy that's super clutch, scored his fifth career overtime winner last night, Carter Verhaeghe, plus he's a 50-1 shot. So they think they're going to go deep.
Now, you send me about how the Leafs lost him?
Okay. They traded him. Do you want to hear the trade?
Yeah.
I got to find the...
Okay, first of all, I know we're going to talk more Florida soon in Tampa, but what a set of hands on the overtime goal.
Nasty. Yeah.
Tight, and then to be able to corral the puck and put it upstairs was a thing of beauty.
So he was traded from the Leafs with Taylor Beck, Christopher Gibson, Matt Finn, and Thomas Nielsen for Michael Grabner.
But...
That was like that Lou wanted to get rid of all the contracts.
Yeah. Nobody thought he could skate.
That's what
back then.
But like, I have a hard time killing the Leafs for it because Tampa literally let him go too.
Yeah,
like it's not just the Leafs that.
But agents
quit on him.
Said no to him.
Really?
Agents who watched him. Was he in the OHL?
Yeah, played for the I believe the Ice Dogs.
Ice Dogs.
Yeah,
Niagara.
Yeah.
Agents passed on him.
It's crazy.
Well, things have worked out pretty well for him.
And that's just such a sweet move, like you said. All right, that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19+. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll tee up the rest of the series. We still got to hear from Rick Bowness on his hockey club going down last night, evening that series with Colorado. Carberry, head coach of the Washington Capitals, down 2-0 to the New York Rangers, and he took a little slice off of Ovi last night. We'll get into that when we return to the Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, getting you ready for puck drop tonight. What are y'all giggles?
Nothing. Got the funniest friends in the world. That's it. Yeah. Oh, my buddies are hilarious.
Way to stay focused on our
show.
Well,
I was in the break. You know, I want to stay locked in when we come back. So, just to talk about Verhaeghe being clutch,
yeah.
I wanted to bring up the numbers. This is from SportsCent Stats, which is a wonderful follow on X if you like sports stats, which I do. Most career postseason OT goals. Joe Sakic has 8, who's an all-time leader, which is just an amazing stat. Maurice Richard has 6. Heard of him. Perry, Glenn Anderson, Carter Verhaeghe, and Patrick Kane are all tied at 5.
It's crazy.
That's unbelievable company.
Not a ton of opportunities.
Yes.
You know, maybe, I don't know, 3-4 a year. You got to be on some good teams.
Yeah. It's crazy.
3-4 a year if you're on good teams.
All right, let's follow that up with the fact that the Panthers found a way to go up 2-0 in this series with a 3-2 win off of that goal by Carter Verhaeghe. And
I felt like Tampa was going to get it.
The exhibition between goalie Bob and Vasilevskiy, they were like heavyweights.
I mean, it was just brilliant to watch as a hockey fan. As a Canadian hockey fan, not as great if you're thinking about Russia potentially getting back into international competitions and having to beat one of those two guys in a big game is not a great thought, but they were both dialed in.
Yeah.
It was excellent to watch.
I mean, Bobrovsky was otherworldly, but the save he made, the spin around backhand desperation save, we'll see that on highlight reels for the next 100 years of hockey.
That was on Dumba.
Yeah, and
it was dumbfounded.
Nothing you could do. He shoveled it hard into the middle of the net with the goalie facing backwards.
Well, I actually think there's a case to be made that Dumba hit it too well. It's the perfect shot. He one-timed a backhand and got pace and got it up. I mean, what? You don't want a guy to try to pick a corner there. You don't want him to slide on the ice. It's a perfect shot. It's an unbelievable save.
Would you like to hear Cooper talk about the goaltending battle and what he saw?
I would, yes.
All right, let's listen to that.
Well, you're looking at two of the best. And you know, sit here and be in the biggest stage in the greatest league in the world and then watch two guys like that go toe-to-toe. Sometimes you have to sit here. I know I'm the coach of one of the teams, but kind of marvel at, you know, some of the saves that were made. And, on that one save, like, you know, Bob didn't quit on it. It's probably more on us than him. So, but you got to tip your hat to him. You know, I thought the biggest saves were the two Vasi made after that save, which, you know, at the time could have sunk us. But he, you know, kept us in it. So, you know, it was a pretty sparkling performance by both guys.
I really loved it.
That's vintage Cooper.
ABC with Cooper is always be coaching. He is always
never
coaching.
Stops.
Yeah, their guy saved it was good, but the two our guy
better.
Made those
way
were the saves.
Better.
Save of the century, but we could have done better. wasn't him.
It was on us.
Dom Hasek would have like one of those every other night.
I you know what blows my
That's
mind?
The way Dom
yes
goaltended.
Played. Someone showed a video. They put a video on Twitter. They're like, yeah, this is like a similar save that Hasek made. I can't get over the quality of the video. I watched this hockey as a child.
Oh, I know.
It looks like it's like Rocket Richard era.
100 years ago.
I cannot believe
this was 2001.
Video cameras were terrible.
I know.
We were watching it. You ever like go back and watch an old golf highlight where they just show the ball in the air?
I think cameramen were drunk or something back then.
When I was technology, everyone was fine. They were just hammered. When I was super sick around the Masters, I watched the 86 Masters broadcast on YouTube.
Yeah.
And delirious, by the way. I was coming in and out watching it.
Yeah.
They did an unbelievable job in 86 covering it and they were all over it. But yeah, the quality of the, it's like, this is a
different
world.
Guy makes a swing, then you look at the sky for 14 seconds and then they show you where the ball ends up.
But if we're having a goalie debate, there's no better goalie I've ever seen in my life than Hasek. Hasek is the number one best goalie. Like, I know Waugh has better, not Berdour has all the records, but there's no goalie I feared like Hasek. Number one, by far.
You too?
Oh, yeah.
He was
absolutely. And I can't.
You ever come close to scoring on him?
I think I did score on one goal on him. I did. But he'd be one of those where you think you got half the net and then he'd just come out of nowhere like Superman.
The one where
he shut you down and you're like going back to the bench going, what just happened to me?
No goalie coach would let him exist like that today. And in fairness, it probably wouldn't work with today's shooters, maybe.
I've got amazing images of Dom in my head. The one that I can't get out of is that him in Czechia going back to get his memorabilia and throwing it in a shopping cart. Did you never saw that?
No, I've never seen it.
Yeah, something happened, and he had a ton of memorabilia, and they called him and said, we don't need it anymore. You come and get
it. He just went and picked it up?
Just picked it up. He's just picking pieces up like a blocker. And I'm like, what is happening? This is the greatest goalie that ever played the game.
Broke my little heart in two pieces, too, in the Olympics in that shootout.
Oh, my God.
And Gretzky sitting on the bench.
But he did the intentional fallback rollover. Yeah. Like, he would commit to one knowing the role was an option.
One important piece in that game, Sam Bennett leaves the game in the second period off of a Montour slap shot.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't return.
A week, they said.
I don't know.
That's large.
He went for x-rays today. Like, this could be devastating. I mean, we talked at length about Demko being out of that lineup. This guy means a ton to the Florida Panthers and what he brings nightly now for them.
So, I was just going to say that Maurice addressed it and it said that he will be out for at least a week, and it's better than the Panthers first feared.
What's the update on it? I mean, depending on who you're cheering for, but you know, that's
a clean break.
That would be better, I guess.
Avoid surgery.
Yeah.
But like that guy, watching him in the series against the Leafs last year, like completely changed the tone of the series.
Nail gun. And
absolutely put Jacob Slavin into another dimension in the conference finals. The literal hardest hit I've ever seen was Bennett on Slavin, I think.
Really
so
hard hit.
He is a game changer for them. That's a big loss.
No question.
Not enough to make the difference between Florida and Tampa, I don't think, but
all right,
it's a big one.
We mentioned also the New York Rangers being up 2-0 and what might be a very frustrated head coach out of Washington addressing the fact that Ovi, 30-goal scorer Ovi, had a very difficult two games at MSG.
Yeah. The play, he gets a puck cross ice, and he's getting pressure right away, so he just all of a sudden is surprised, and then he bobbles it, and they turn it over. I thought the first two games looks a little bit off. He's struggling. I mean, it's hard. Like, it's the playoffs, on the road, he's getting a tough matchup. So he's, it's two games, right? We're going back home now. We'll get an opportunity to be able to control the matchup for him, and he can flip it. Like, that's one thing about he can flip it in one game, and now he can all of a sudden be a difference maker and help us win a game or be a driver in winning us a game on home ice.
All right, that wasn't horrible. I didn't hear that. You kind of teed it up a little bit for me.
I mean, rookie head coach calling him out, saying he's not very good.
I thought it wasn't horrible. I thought he gave him a lot of outs.
That's what I got
coach
out of it.
Coached it a bit, but you gotta.
Yeah.
You're Spencer Carver. He's Alexander Ovechkin.
He said he looks a bit off and he's struggling. Those are genuine criticisms.
Yes.
But then he gave it the whole... He's got tough matchup.
Still a great guy.
He's got great teeth.
Did you see the play?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my God.
The back check.
Yeah, it was...
Well, I mean, he fumbles it.
Well, he's fumbling it. He's not moving his feet, but there's a lot of moments in the game now where he doesn't move his feet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like that wasn't like an isolated incident of him not moving his feet.
No.
It's typically kind of in the train tracks until it's time to chop, chop, chop and get to the spot.
In the history of the game, I bet you couldn't find any video of a guy during play that can stop on one spot and not move.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I read a thing on soccer, footy, if you will, for Sam, who's a closer follower, about Messi and how his distance traveled in a hockey or in a soccer game is the smallest. He conserves, and goes.
Yeah.
And that is Ovi at this point to me. And it's tough to be a conservationist in hockey.
It is.
You'd like your guys to get to the spots when, you know, ahead of time, be proactive. And
Messi
that
gets
element
the ball
of his game is gone.
Messi gets the ball and picks out a perfect pass, like, immediately.
Yeah.
And Ovi's just trying to blast it now.
Yeah,
and,
he's just trying to get to that spot.
These games don't matter to Ovi. We all know. He's saving it for the regular season.
Saving to get his records.
Yeah.
All right.
Do we want to sneak in a Burnett clip
what, we
from
it?
Nashville?
We played
did
top.
We play it already?
Yeah, committed to the paint.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
So I thought, you know, we could have a conversation on Hellebuck, because I think through two games in that series, I think there's some, you know, some conversations about his playoff stuff.
Sad said he's been ventilated, which is a hell of a word to describe a guy who's had holes put in him. But I mean, it's been a tough couple games.
His last six playoff games, he has a 1-5-0 record with a .434 goals against average and an .876 save percentage.
Yeah, not great, Bob. But
you think they're bailing on him?
No, I don't want.
I mean, who?
Chris Waugh's been good, though.
I think fans, yeah. I mean, it's playoffs. These games mean the most. It's when you start seeing them go in. And listen, like, you're not going to kill him for any of the goals that go in last night, but Josh Manson breaks in on a breakaway at the end of the period, and you're just like, can we just get a stop? And he makes a great move, I know.
That was a really good move.
I know he does. But
he can't give up that five hole to
make
Josh
a save for your team.
Manson. Yeah.
You're the Vezina favorite. Like, make one on the defenseman on the breakaway to keep him at 4-2, and that broke him. They come back. They don't win the game. So
yeah, it makes a good save that leads to their goal to make it 2-1. That kind of gets him started going the other way. He has some good moments, and you know, to go to his defense even further, I think, you know, in his NHL career, he's a .914 save percentage in the postseason. He's had stretches of being able to play in the big moments, and, you know, he'll find it. He's a great goalie, and he's not like one of these guys to me who – you know, where he's just always having a bad series. Like, he's an elite goalie. I think you're going to get good performances ahead. I just want to interrupt this conversation to say that Kip scored against Hasek on March 13th, 1993, Whalers versus the Sabres. Assist from Adam Burt and Murray Craven. Thank you to Jobo, our producer.
Oh, gosh. Why can't you crack information like that?
Kipper, because I am talking.
9 seconds ago. He's on air.
I talk.
That's stuff that you should have collected before we started the show 3 years ago. You should have a library beside you. Just snap it off.
A foresight of when we were talking about you scoring on Hasek. But that's sick. Scored on Hasek and scored on Waugh too, right?
I did get one on him too. In the Montreal Forum.
Wow. Pretty sweet. Not a lot of people can say that.
Do we feel differently about the series because it was Georgiev stinks, and Winnipeg still found a way to win, even though they gave up six in game one, and there's no way Georgiev's going to save this thing for Colorado, and now we're like, we've got a different feel in game three.
Not entirely for me. I know it is disconcerting if you're a Jets fan that Georgiev had a good moment, or Georgie the Fifth, as our friend Rob Brown called him, but... You know, he's an NHL goalie. He's capable of putting together a few good periods. I don't think that changes who he is. He's gettable.
I still think it's going deep. Still think it's probably going to be a 7-game series, but
okay.
McKinnon is just
no
good.
Okay. And you're not wrong, but the game changer in this series isn't McKinnon. It's McCarr.
He's amazing.
And Winnipeg, they don't have one of those.
No one does. I mean, well, maybe Vancouver.
And that's for me... Like when you watch these early games now, those star D stand out.
They do.
Okay. Yossi, McCarr, like these type
Hughes,
of guys.
Hughes, Fox.
How about Bouchard?
They rise.
Yeah.
And I look at Winnipeg's blue line and I go, okay, they're okay. And Josh Morrissey is a good defenseman.
Really good.
Is he not Morgan Rielly, little better Morgan Rielly maybe?
He is.
Like a...
That class.
He is.
Definite number one.
He is. But see, Morgan Rielly is a 2-3 for me.
I know, but you say that, but if you actually start writing a list, he's one of the 32 best.
Yeah, he's a number one on the lease. He's number one.
But that's... You're looking at a blanket across the league. I'm looking at it as where are you slotted... When my team wins the Stanley Cup, and it's you're not leading the Stanley Cup charge. So that's why I look at Morgan Rielly and I go, he for me slots 2-3, right? So I look at Josh Morrissey, and I like Josh Morrissey just a little bit more than I like Morgan Rielly. Mm-hmm. They're both excellent defense, but Josh Morrissey can't do what a Makar can do in this series.
It's basically an unfair, you know, who can, right?
But that could be the difference between winning and losing for me.
Yeah.
You know who's in that class too, and they don't really get talked about it, but they should, is Pietrangelo. Pietrangelo is in that upper tier. It's different with him.
I was actually racking my brain as he said that, and I was like, the Penguins won a cup without Letang the 1 year. They didn't really have anyone, but Pietrangelo was with St. Louis that year. He was their guy, same with Vegas.
It doesn't look like it does with Makar or like with...
less flash.
He's a little meaner.
Massive, just big guy stud. Yeah, I love Pietrangelo. So, yeah.
Do you want to hear Bonus's take?
Yeah, let's hear
his thoughts on where the series is at.
Okay, perfect.
We were better. Yeah, we were a lot better in certain areas. We had some lapses, certainly at the end of the second there. That kind of caught up to us a little bit. But you know, we had the start we really wanted. Then they got their power play, and they kind of finished up strong in the first. But for the most part, it was a lot better in areas, and there's still improvement to be made in other areas.
All right, so he's keeping it. No panic.
As a theme of our coaches' clips today was the stuff we're doing good, we need to keep doing, and the stuff we're doing bad, we need to do better, I found, you know? It's like, okay, no one's saying anything.
I know it's non-playoff related, but we got a couple seconds here before we go. Have you seen the list of names that have been filed, the trademarks for Utah?
I have seen the list.
Would you like to hear them?
Kip loves these guys.
I know that's why I brought it up.
Bring it to him.
Okay, the full list. The Utah Mammoth.
It's very good.
The Utah Ice.
Awful. Worst name I've ever heard.
Utah Yetis.
Also like.
Utah Venom.
Nope.
Utah Fury.
No.
Utah Blizzard. The Utah Outlaws and the Utah Hockey Club, or Utah Head HC. Any peak in your interest, bud?
I'm not sure.
Mid.
Yeah. Won't even engage.
I don't know. Mammoth.
What colors do you like for them? How many stripes on the sweater? No?
Just don't reinvent the wheel. Just don't reinvent the wheel. Like, less is more with jerseys. We don't need the Kraken. We don't need the Golden Knights.
No.
Less is more.
Vegas was ridiculous.
Less is
Kraken
more.
Kraken did a nice sweater.
Yeah, but there you go. I thought I'd bring that up for you because I know you're just dying to know on this playoff game day what those names are, Kip. But in all honesty, I think it should be Utah Hockey Club. Utah HC.
I knew you'd say that.
It's nice. I like that. You can do a UHC, some kind of symbol, something plain. There you go.
Great.
I guess the owner had a few of the guys, maybe a dozen guys out there, 15 guys.
Oh, yeah?
Took them golfing. Yeah,
nice golf courses.
He is like...
Oh, took the owners?
The owner, Ryan Smith.
I like this guy.
Who did he take out?
I think I heard about 10, 15 guys.
From where? Who?
They flew them in.
Oh, the players?
Yeah, the players.
Come in, check out.
Oh, that's awesome.
They took them golfing. Families have gone out there.
I heard Keller likes the golf.
I heard
he's a stick.
He's talking about what he's going to do for them, how they're going to be treated, wives, all of it.
You know, Ryan Smith, he went on Pat McAfee. And shout out to them for what they're doing for hockey, trying to, you know, kind of jam it into the mainstream in the U.S.
A good producer would get Pat McAfee on the show.
Well, let's get to it.
How many years now have we been trying to get it mainstream in the U.S. now? How long has it been?
Well, we had it. 1996. It was ahead of the NBA.
Back in
our glory days.
God love Pat McAfee. I mean, he was wearing a Jets jersey the other day talking about their barn. I guess he doesn't watch many of their regular season games, but barn's not as good.
Got no football to talk about.
Draft's on Thursday, bud.
Oh, Thursday. Okay, then he starts up.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. What'd you guys think of kind of slid under the radar? Quinn getting fired, head coach of the San Jose Sharks.
If a tree falls in San Jose and they fire the tree.
It's his fault. They ice an ECHL team and they gun him.
But it's not about you did a bad job. It's that we're doing a different thing, right? Like, what are you supposed to do with that group?
Good luck to the next head coach taking that thing.
He'll be gone in two years. What was the name here they had with the Blue Jays?
Montoya.
They should hire him. Yeah, just move on.
All right.
11 a.m. tomorrow, 1 hour.
11 a.m. Eastern tomorrow. My producer has told me he can't find a clip of me scoring a goal, but he can tell us it's 11 a.m. Eastern tomorrow on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. If you get a chance, give us a rating and review. We'd love to hear from you. Enjoy the games tonight, and we're back tomorrow at 11 a.m.
It's the jacket.